today on Rocking the Suburbs.
You people got the patience of like a ferret on crack, man.
Hey, this is Jim. Thanks for tuning in to Rockin' the Suburbs. You'll hear from Patrick Foster in just a minute because we recorded a special live edition of this podcast not too long ago at Lost Rhino Brewing in Northern Virginia. And the way this worked is our friend and talented singer and songwriter, Matt Carlson, he was on tour. And he stopped by and did a show in Northern Virginia there at the Lost Rhino. And what we did was we arranged to interview him in front of the audience before he performed. Matt Carlson, you may recall, he's been on the podcast before. If you go to suburbspod.com and search Matt Carlson, you'll come up with his previous episodes. He is in a couple of bands, one called The Stick Arounds, which is a great sort of power pop band, and another one called Harbor Coat, which is sort of a great kind of jangle rock band. So, you know, very cool indie rock sort of stuff. He's out of Michigan, and he was doing a solo tour around the eastern part of the United States of America, and that's how it all worked out. He played a show. Before the show, we interviewed him in front of the audience, and that interview is what you're going to hear here. And then we'll play out with one of his songs that he performed live. You'll hear that at the end. And then tomorrow we're going to present you with more Matt Carlson music recorded by Rockin' the Suburbs. All right, so let's get right into this interview. Here we go. All right, we're here at Lost Rhino Brewing Company in Ashburn, Virginia, and we are doing a live podcast here, Patrick.
Yes,
you and Jim. I here, rocking the suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And
I thought I was supposed to do. I'm Matt Carlson.
We're gonna talk here with Matt Carlson. Hey, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
Are you so excited?
Come on, people.
I am.
thank you, peoples. All right, I want to mention here that we're gonna interview Matt, and then he's gonna play some songs, and you're really gonna enjoy this, believe me. And anyone who does not enjoy this, there's a boxing academy just a couple spots down, and we can go fight later. All right,
I will fight you.
That's right.
That feels like a lot of pressure.
I'm not kidding. The boxing academy is right there.
Do you have keys?
All right,
you can get us in right now.
We can do that. All right. Thanks to the people from Lost Rhino. You made some excellent beer, and we so appreciate that. Thanks to Bill Mulligan for running the sound here for us, running the recording. I want to mention that there's merchandise in the back there that you can purchase from Matt Carlson. Please do that. And I just want to thank Matt Carlson for joining us here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Okay. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about Matt and his music, and I'm going to start off with an easy question, just a small question. Okay. We'll build up to the bigger questions.
Fair.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the small, easy question is, who is Matt Carlson?
That is small, and it is easy. Matt Carlson is a graphic designer, a singer-songwriter, a dad, a husband, a friend, a dude who quit his job a week ago to go on tour across the eastern United States. Yeah, it's true. 8 days ago, I left a job that I had worked at for 23 years. So Matt Carlson right now is unemployed. Yeah.
So, Matt, tell everybody a little bit about what the tour is and how you conceived it and what you wanted to achieve by doing it.
So I've been playing in a band called the Stick Arounds now for 14 or 15 years, and I've been in another band called Harbor Coat for another six. And I've been playing with those two bands live for that whole time and play, give or take, you know, 20 or 25 shows a year. Thanks, Jim. Play 20 or 25 shows a year. One of the things about playing original music at this level is it's really hard to make any money, especially if you're taking five or six dudes out on the road. And I realized that I was super unhappy with what I was doing for a living, and it was on the educational calendar. I sold caps and gowns and graduation announcements. And even before I decided to quit my job, I knew I was going to have most of July off, and I knew I could take 2 weeks. And so I started looking at people that I knew around the country and going, okay, where could I go? I'd played a couple house shows, but I'd never done any touring with it. I'd been to a few, and they're really neat experiences. But it was all really just a matter of a leap of faith and just kind of saying, I'm going to do this thing. Will you host me? And I got a hold of Jim, and I got a hold of some wonderful people from another podcast that I'm involved in called Stand Up with Pete Dominic. And basically, those two groups of people helped me get hosts for the 15 shows that I'm going to play. And this trip will take me roughly 3,000 miles. I'm going to play in 10 different states. It's 15 different shows, and I'm doing it all on my own, and it's weird.
And your car broke down on the first day.
It did. It did. Well, technically, it was day three, but I hadn't even left the state of Michigan yet. So
you're from Lansing, Michigan.
I'm from Lansing, Michigan. And let's see. The Wednesday before the tour started, so the 21st of June, I bought a new-to-me Subaru Outback. And within about 3 days, I started having coolant trouble with it. And on the following Monday, I took it to the dealer where I bought it, this independent, literally two dudes from Iraq. They're immigrants. They have this small dealership. They're trying to build something. And it would have been really easy for me to go, oh, I'm going to get scammed because I'm having coolant trouble. And I called him, and he's like, bring it in Monday. I got you. So I bring it in Monday. They stay up all night Monday night looking at it. They fix it on Tuesday. He calls me, says, it's going to be ready for you at 10 a.m. when we open on Wednesday. So I go pick it up. On Wednesday, I pick it up. I drive it around town. Everything's great. I go to a show in Detroit on Thursday, a show in Kalamazoo on Friday. I come home, and I go to leave. And I leave Detroit on Saturday morning, and I drive south. And I'm headed to Pittsburgh, and the car conks out 45 minutes south of Detroit. There's steam coming out of the radiator, and I have a half an hour where I feel like this dream is dead before I ever got out of the state.
Can I just say, by the way, you're from Michigan, by American?
Okay, Jim. Jim, the car I had before this was a Chevy Equinox that I bought brand new, and it had to put a brand new engine in it at 114,000 miles. I did that, and then it died again with 187,000 miles on it. So I had an engine that lasted 114,000 miles, and then an engine that lasted less than that. At that point, I started thinking that maybe Buy American was a fool's errand.
All right.
It's not that fair bad enough. But I'm going to be honest with you. It's going to be a while before I spend money on a GM product again. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, so the Subaru.
So the Subaru breaks down, and I'm in this panic. I managed to get it to a parking lot of a library in this tiny little township. My dealer answers the phone on the first ring. He says, Matt, I can't get you a car, but I can pick this one up. And if you can come see me when you get back from tour, I'll have two Outbacks waiting for you to look at. You don't like either one of those, pick another car on the lot. You don't like those, I'll give you your money back. So I feel like I'm not going to get screwed from my car, but I still don't have a way to get to Pittsburgh. Now, I have texted my friend Tim, who is in Detroit, who I've stayed with the night before, and within an hour, he has cleaned out his car. He is headed down to where I am. He picks me up. We load my stuff into his car. I drive him back to his house in downtown Detroit, and he says, take my car for 16 days. That is a friend.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Give it up for Tim.
Absolutely. That's a good friend.
And the Honda CR-V out there with the Michigan plates on it, that's Tim's car, so don't hit it, please.
So already, I mean, the tour is off to a good start there because
things are just going great, Jim.
It's the power, but it shows the power of friendship and positivity, right? Like this is what you were looking for.
This is an amazing example of the community that I had hoped to kind of seek out and to hopefully build. So, one of the things that was really important to me in doing this was to kind of try to bridge these groups of people. So there's these two podcasts and then there's all these friends I have all over the country. And it just seemed like if I could find a way to snake my way to the right places, we could create some nifty little nights where some worlds could collide and really cool stuff could happen. And so far, that literally has happened at every stop. It's been incredible.
Well, these are the best people, by the way.
Well, that's clear. Yes. That's. I mean, we'll find out after I calculate merch sales. That's how we determine who the best people are. So we look at receipts.
That's great. So let's tell the people when I said who is Matt Carlson, I wasn't kidding. So
I know
you grew up in Lansing. Right?
I grew up around Lansing, Michigan. Lansing. Yep.
And what are your earliest musical memories?
My earliest musical memories were like almost every other kid of my generation: the Beatles, the Beach Boys. And Bob Dylan. Those were really the first three musical things that I really remember hearing. And then the thing that I remember kind of really falling in love with as a kid, in addition to those things, was my mom listened to a lot of Donovan, Cat Stevens, and Simon and Garfunkel. And I think those three things were kind of really foundational for me, like as a songwriter. I think that stuff there are moments where I still see that kind of stuff poking into my work. And that was a lot of the early stuff that I learned to play. But I actually learned to play guitar with a book called Beatles for Easy Guitar. Anybody else have this book? It was literally this book where they took all the Beatles songs and it was just major and minor chords. And if you could play those, you could approximate. So there's none of the passing chords. There's none of the weird like modulations. It's just like, can you play A minor and C and D and F? And you can parse your way through. I will. And I did. And that was like, it was like the sixth time I tried to play guitar. And it was the one time it actually stuck. I was like 20.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was. Yeah.
So you didn't start playing until later on?
No, I didn't start playing until after high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what did you grow up like listening to? I mean, was it the stuff you mentioned?
It was a lot of that stuff. So my parents' first date, their first official date, was to go see Simon and Garfunkel on the Bridge Over Troubled Water tour before the record came out.
Wow.
On Halloween night, 1969. And so I sort of think of that as like the musical moment at which I was conceived, because then my parents get married and I'm actually physically conceived. And then Simon and Garfunkel become a really important part of my musical upbringing. But I was also raised on a bunch of like classic country. My grandparents listened to that. So I heard a lot of like Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Tom T. Hall, Buck Owens, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. I'm loving the story. When did you first think, Matt, that you could do this and that it would make an impact on people, or people would pay attention to what you were trying to do?
I think it's funny. I guess at this age, I don't think about it in terms of whether people are going to pay attention, or I don't want to say that. Like, I want people to come, and I wanted to do it basically so that I could make it sustainable. I wanted to engage and sort of reach enough people that it was meaningful to do it and it was logistically sustainable to do it, that I had places to play, that I could make a little bit of money and get me to the next town. That it was really more about creating these little small moments than it was kind of trying to like create a lot of attention or buzz. It was right. Like, what's enough to will it into being? And I think maybe the one lesson I've learned of getting a little bit older is that willing it into being is really all it needs to be. It doesn't need to be anything bigger than that. Being able to do it is the gift.
I was just trying to cheaply get you to say you wanted to meet girls.
So Patrick, I'm going to tell you a quick story.
Okay.
I was in theater and in quiz bowl in high school. I pretty much had just decided that girls were not a thing I was going to get to be around. So it was,
yeah.
I just watched a lot of Monty Python and listened to a lot of The Cure.
Yeah. I played trombone in high school, which was a...
I'm sorry.
A girl... that was a female repellent.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So did you have any kind of musical epiphany? Like, I always tell the story about how, like, when I went to college my freshman year and got into REM and, you know, pressed play on Fables of the Reconstruction and heard those opening chords of Feeling Gravity's Pull, and I was like... This is it. This is it. Like, I'm now open to a whole new world of music. You had any experience like that?
Yeah. I heard a Billy Bragg song while I was in a car with a girl. And we were hanging out on a Friday night, you know, just like you do in high school. And this song came on, and it was all about this kid falling in love with this girl in high school and realizing that she was leading all the dudes on and that he was never going to get to hang out with her. And
The Saturday Boy.
And I just remember hearing that. And I remember thinking, that's a short story in 3.5 minutes. And it's a short story that I can relate to and that I could see and feel. And, there's a line, I don't remember the exact line, maybe you remember, Patrick, where he talks about standing outside of her window when he makes the realization. Right. And I just remember going, I've stood on that sidewalk, dude. Like, I've been there before. And I went, because I never wanted to be like a shredder. I never wanted to be Hendrix or Jimmy Page or one of those guys. I wanted to be Peter Buck. I wanted to be Billy Bragg. I wanted to play guitar well enough to write songs. And after Billy Bragg, and at the same time as Billy Bragg, really, it was REM that was really the linchpin for me. For me, it was Document, not Fables, but I fell in love with that record hard. And then I remember going to the record store, to Warehouse Records in East Lansing, the day that Green came out, and waiting in line for it. Children, we used to have records that used to get bought, and you went to a physical place because that was how you had to hear music. And they used to, new release days were on Tuesdays, and in a college town like East Lansing, I don't know if you guys did this, you'd wait on Monday night until midnight, and there was always like, it was always an event. And so I remember at Warehouse that release, it was spring of 89, and they brought in this giant balloon, like log. Remember the log from the front of it?
Yeah, right.
Like this green, and it was just this giant inflatable log sitting on a corner, and it was like the most stupid thing I'd ever seen. And I was like, but that's where I'm going to go get my record.
Yes. Warner Brothers had the money.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Right.
Matt, when you talk about those experiences, those formative experiences. One thing for me that was really powerful as I grew older and did different things was when another band, a newer band, recreated that kind of little firework in the sky, and then you could still connect it to like the bands that did that for you at the beginning.
Yes.
Were there groups along the way, you know, that did that for you? Not that I'm leading into Teenage Fan Club. You're leading the witness.
it certainly got there by the time Bandwagon Ass came out. I would say that for me, the things I found after that really blew some things open for me were bands like XTC, Robin Hitchcock and the Egyptians.
Right.
Echo and the Bunnymen was really big for me. And then, yeah, we get to the early 1990s, and then the genius of Teenage Fan Club becomes super important for me.
Yep.
I would say, other than Billy Bragg and REM, Teenage Fan Club, in terms of my influence, probably have more of an influence than anybody else.
Beautiful.
So when did you start writing songs?
Almost as soon as I learned to play. So, I mean, I had always written lyrics and poems and stuff like that, and then I started putting chords to them and writing melodies and doing things like that, and was terrible at it for a very long time. Gradually got better.
Were there certain... Okay, this is interesting to me. So were there certain bands that you like tried to learn their song so that would lead you into your own songwriting? You know, that would help you sort of like figure out how songs are put together?
Yeah. So that was obviously much harder than it is in the internet age, because I couldn't go out and just go, okay, what are the chords to the Saturday Boy?
Right.
How do I play Levi Stubbs' Tears? I couldn't do that. I had to figure it out. So I actually had a kid that I went to high school with, who was a year younger, who was a metalhead, but he had perfect pitch and he was kind of a musical genius. And so he helped me kind of suss out the chords on three or four songs that I was able to play. So like I learned to play The One I Love. I learned to play a couple of Billy Bragg songs. Like I learned to play like Waiting for the Great Leap Forward. Yep. Some stuff like that. And then I was able to, you could actually mail order a book of Billy Bragg chords.
Oh, wow.
from his office in London. And so I sent,
wow,
like it was old school. I sent a check and a little envelope. And like 3 weeks later, this package showed up from Barking Essex, and it was called Victim of Geography, and it was, wow, all the songs from Back to Basics through Workers' Playtime.
How cool, nice, is that? Spreading the gospel by teaching other people to play your own music. I love,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That's, it's beautiful, amazing. That's, yeah, beautiful. That's beautiful.
So when you started writing songs, what were the big themes to those songs?
Oh, unrequited love, you know, real original shit like that. I remember one of the first songs I wrote, and I don't remember the name of it. I wrote a song about a gigolo in Detroit, and I'm sure I got all of the details wrong because I was just an idiot 21-year-old kid who thought he knew everything. But at the time, I really thought that like this was Bukowski level shit. Yeah, I thought I was a genius.
Well, you have to believe that every time you write a song, or there's no other reason to do it,
it's
right?
It's funny. That feeling has faded more, Patrick.
On that topic, when you got married,
yeah,
and started a family, you know, when many people do that, it sort of, in some cases, kills and or stops your musical exploration or your creative influence. But it seems that for you, perhaps it even made it stronger or gave you a new source of inspiration to create your art.
It's funny. Nobody's ever brought that up before, but I think there's something to that idea. I think so I learned how to play guitar in like 92, 93. I joined my first band in 94. It's over the next year. And then after that was over, I was kind of emotionally wounded. I was really kind of hurt. I lived in a college town. I lived in East Lansing. And what happens is you make these really intense relationships and then people move on. And then if you live in that college town, you're sort of stuck there.
Right.
And so I was feeling pretty, I don't know. I was feeling a little lost. I was feeling like I had done this really cool thing for a year and a half and it had changed my life and I didn't know how to make it happen again. And so I kind of, I don't want to say I stopped music, but like I really backed off. And, I wound up sort of reinvesting myself in the world of theater again. And then my kids came along in 98 and I just realized that like I could spend time doing theater, which was every night, five nights a week, or I could make music and I could have band practice or rehearse once or twice a week on my own. And quite frankly, it was just much more feasible to do music.
Yeah.
And so I started doing a little home recording. I made a solo record. And that all happens literally, like that first solo record comes out the summer before my second kid is born.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I mentioned the themes of your music. How have those themes matured over time?
I would say that I don't think my work has gotten more political, but I think it's gotten more sort of directly observational about, I've spent the last several years writing a lot of songs about people who have been left behind. That was never intentional. I didn't mean to do that. And that is largely sort of the theme that runs through those two Harborcoat records, are people who have been sort of abandoned or forgotten or left behind or who are broken and no one seems to notice. And in the Stickarounds, it's different because I only write about half the songs, roughly speaking. And in that band, I'm still writing about those things, but because it's in the guise of being more of a conventional sort of jangly power pop band, I think maybe the words get a little lost. And so the themes and the Stickarounds aren't as apparent, but I don't know that they're that different. I think the presentation musically just changes a little bit.
So on this tour, that you started. How long have you been going now?
This is day 9.
Okay. What have you learned about America so far, driving around on our highways?
Ooh. Drivers in Maryland are intense. You people got the patience of like a ferret on crack, man. And I live in Michigan, and those people are aggravated all the time because it's cold and it's nasty. What I have learned is that people are remarkably awesome. I have learned that for all of the awfulness that's out there, I have had amazing experiences night in and night out ever since I left town. And I don't know that I'm surprised by that, but it really feels good to be reminded that it's true. Also, this is a really beautiful place. I drove through Loudoun County, Virginia today. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
It is. It's great.
That bridge over the Potomac, that's a nice view.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I got to see the Poconos yesterday. I'd never been through the Poconos. That sounds like a place you make fun of. You know? It's lovely. Those rock formations. I mean, it's just a highway. I think what I've learned is I haven't been to a place yet where I wasn't pretty readily available to find some pretty awesome people and have a good night.
That's cool. Very cool. What's the best thing you've eaten so far on the tour?
The best thing I've eaten last night, I had fried cheese.
Really?
Yeah. And here's the thing. Fried cheese is not the best thing I've eaten, but last night I was just hungry enough and just drunk enough that it was perfect. It was perfect.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's all about the spot that you're in.
It is. And the food has been incredible. People have been feeding me like crazy. The woman who hosted last night had probably a 14-foot table just full of food.
Wow.
Just nuts.
That's great.
Did you expect that pinball would still be popular as I look at the next room over here?
No, but I will say, I went to the first time I went to the great city of Pittsburgh, I went to the Warhol Center, which is a great museum. And when I was there, the exhibit was the history of pinball was in the lobby.
Nice.
And the deal was you could play it, all of these machines, for whatever the rate was when the machine was made.
Oh, beautiful.
And so there is a Captain Fantastic and the Dirt Brown Cowboy machine out here. They had one of those, and you could play for a nickel.
Nice.
And so I spent an hour and 15 minutes in the Warhol just playing Elton John pinball. I was gonna make my, if I had gotten into the top 10, I was going to do B-E-R for Bernie Taupin, and that was going to be my...
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, how long is your tour total, would you say?
16 days.
16 days. So yeah. Who takes care of your lawn while you're gone?
My wife is mowing my lawn while I'm gone. Okay, all right. It's probably a mess because it's rained every day since I left, pretty much. But before I left, it hadn't rained in like a month. And so I had...
You thought it was safe. I can go now.
Yeah, I thought, well, I'll just leave now.
Yeah, well, that's a very relevant question, Jim, because as Buck Owens once said, who's going to mow your grass when I'm
gone? That's a very good... Well, whoever's going to mow it, I'm going to be at Sam's place when it happens.
Talk a little bit about the songs you're going to play tonight. Is it going to be a mix of all your bands?
So what I'll do tonight is I'll do... it'll mostly be Stick Arounds and Harborcoat songs that I have written, and then I'll play a couple songs from my band before that called the Pantones. And I may or may not play a cover or two just to appease our lovely hosts.
Sweet.
Nice.
That sounds beautiful.
You got anything else?
No, I'm excited about the show.
All right. Are you guys excited about the show? All right.
I can feel excited.
Now, before this, I did bring the bag of questions.
The bag of questions.
This is the much fabled bag of questions.
Right.
I pull a random question out of here, and then we ask Matt that.
Okay. Can I ask a question about the bag of questions?
Yes, of course.
All right.
This is very meta.
Where is the bag of questions from?
My family room.
Okay. And who wrote the questions?
I did.
Okay. When?
3 weeks ago.
And these are all questions for me?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
This is just a bag of questions.
Just a bag of questions.
That's all it is.
All right.
And I'm realizing now I put all the cards...
I like this.
Blank cards without questions in this bag.
This is clearly a bag built for the long haul, people.
So this is a problem.
This bag of questions is going to last forever.
The ones you never finished are still in there.
Yeah, I know. Okay. All right. I pulled out a random question for Matt. What is the strangest thing you've ever eaten?
Sea urchin, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Oh, by, it was in a sushi
accident?
No, it was in a sushi restaurant, and it sounded interesting, and I ordered it, and it was not great. It was. Has anybody else had it?
Sea urchin.
So
anyway.
the way they serve it, at least the way they served it at this place, they basically, you've all seen this, it's like a, it looks like a giant egg, and it's all prickly thing on the outside of it. What they do is they basically cut the top, like, 10% of the egg off to expose it. It looks almost like you've cut off the top of a hard-boiled egg. And the inside is the consistency of, like, butterscotch pudding and about the same color, but it's kind of gritty and somehow more unguent. It's really disgusting. Oh, and it doesn't smell great. That's the other thing.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's really good. Don't get it.
We're going to try one more.
Okay. If it's what's the second strangest thing you've eaten?
All right, no. All right, here we go. Question number two, who let the dogs out?
We all did. We're all responsible.
There you go. Matt Carlson.
Matt Carlson, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Rock and roll.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. We're going to sort of rewire the cables, set up for his performance. There's merch in the back as well. And as I mentioned, you can ask questions between songs of the performance, should you choose. All right?
Yeah.
All right.
And definitely, you know, support Matt. There's a Venmo link on his thing, or you can give him cash for the show, but he's got to pay for hotels and gas and food and all that.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Little break here. Go get yourselves a beer from Lost Rhino. It's a great place.
All right. That was a fun interview. Thanks very much to Matt. Thanks very much to everyone who came out to Lost Rhino. Wonderful time was had by all. And yes, there were pinball machines in the next room over. Lovely pinball gallery there in the brewery. All right. Now, what we knew we're going to play out with the song that Matt opened with at Lost Rhino. You'll hear that in full. And then tomorrow we're going to present you some more Matt Carlson live music and some of the questions that folks in the audience asked Matt during the performance. So that will be a very special edition of Rock in the Suburbs. Hope you tune in. All right, here we go. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan, and on behalf of Patrick Foster, here is Matt Carlson. We'll talk to you all again tomorrow.
Howdy, y'all. How's it going? Thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it. My name's Matty C. I'm going to play a bunch of songs for you tonight. My friends Jim and Patrick invited me. Thanks to all the fine folks here in Northern Virginia representing, and even some folk from Maryland. I'm going to play a bunch of songs. This is called Help Me Out Somehow. It seems like I've been asleep for weeks, wearing decent clothes for days and days. You call me at a real bad time, and when it not be right, I just can't say. Help me, please.
Is Mike Wagner still talking?
He didn't even hear me.
Is Mike Wagner still talking?
He is still talking.
Yeah.